The views expressed on this program are those of the host and the participants.
Okie dokie, welcome back to Media Matters Today. I'm your host, Bob McChesney, and it's my pleasure to be here. We're going to be talking about the Roger Ebert Overlook Film Festival, the film industry, what's going on, the politics of films today, and whatever our listeners, what you'd like to talk about, you're welcome to call in to speak with Roger Ebert and myself. The number, of course, 333-9455, the toll-free number 800-222-9455. But before turning to our guests in the topic for today, I'd like to just take this moment to thank you, the listeners. First of all, a broad thank you from WILL Radio, because we've just finished the one-week pledge drive, and it was a spectacular success for the station, drawing 1,451 listeners who pledged over $150,000 to WILL AM and FM, and we welcomed 404 new members who joined the Friends of WILL. Specifically, though, I'd like to thank all of you listening to Media Matters. This is a show that's just a year old, as you know. I think we started about a year ago, exactly. And at the pledge drive last week with our guest John Nichols, we drew, I think, over 50, maybe 55 callers of support. And if I'm not mistaken, that's an all-time WILL record, and it showed tremendous support for the show. And I just want to thank you from the bottom of my heart. Our producer, Ben Scott, wants to thank you. It's a real statement that the listeners of the Champaign-Urbana area are committed to the sort of discussion that we take up on this show, the issues we raise, and it's greatly appreciated. Our guest today, Roger Ebert, is a Pulitzer Prize-winning film critic. He's been the film critic for the Chicago Sun-Times for over 30 years, although, as many of you may know, he got his start in print journalism right here in Champaign-Urbana at the News-Gazette. He's a native of the area, a graduate, if I'm not mistaken, of Urbana High School and the University of Illinois. He's probably best known for his long-running and highly influential television programs about films, once co-hosted with the late Gene Siskel, currently co-hosted with Richard Roper. And for our purposes, worth noting that Roger Ebert is the host and guiding presence of the Roger Ebert Overlook Film Festival, which will begin here in Champaign-Urbana week after next, April 23rd to 27th. It will be the fifth annual Roger Ebert Overlook Film Festival, co-sponsored or sponsored by the College of Communications under the able guidance of Associate Dean Nancy Casey. And we're going to talk about that festival, too. But first, let me welcome Roger Ebert. Roger, are you there?
Hi, Bob. How are you?
I'm doing great, and I want to thank you very much on such short notice agreeing to be on our program.
A real pleasure.
Well, thank you. I'm delighted to have you. Well, let's start by talking a little bit about the film festival. Now, this is the fifth one. I know it's become a major institution in the area down here in Champaign County, and I think it's getting a lot of attention now in the region and nationally. What was the idea behind it when you launched the festival a few years ago?
Well, the College of Communications, Dean Casey and Dean Rotzel, sponsored something called Cyberfest, which was the celebration of the birthday of HAL 9000, the computer in 2001, which was which the movie informs us was created in Urbana. And from that came a conversation that we might want to have an annual film festival, and they asked me to host it and program it. And I faced a problem because as a film critic, I couldn't be in the position of going to the studios and asking them for their new films and stars and so forth, because these would be movies that I would have to review, and so it would be a conflict. And I came up with this notion of an Overlook Film Festival, Overlook films, genres, formats, and that's what we've been doing, and it's been a lot of fun. We've had both Overlooked older films and films that are even now looking for distribution, so they're Overlooked films of the future, so to speak, but we hope that won't happen to them.
And I'm going down the list of films. You've got the lead-off film. It's a film I suspect a lot of our listeners are familiar with. It's certainly one I think I've seen several times, The Right Stuff.
That
was overlooked?
That was one of the most inexplicable box office flops in movie history. It's familiar now, I suppose, because of home video and some television screenings. But when that movie came out, and it was number one on my list of the best films that year, which I think was about 1985, everyone expected...
I think it was when Glenn was thinking of running for president, so it
must
have been 83 or 4.
Yeah, expecting it to go through the roof, and there was one theory that maybe people got it confused with Glenn's presidential campaign.
Mm-hmm.
There was a cover of Newsweek that combined the two, and that might have confused some people, but I don't know. You know, Apollo 13, which is a somewhat similar film, was a big box office hit, but The Right Stuff was a startling disappointment at the box office. And so, in a sense, we're bringing it back because seeing it on the big screen was an overlooked experience for people because so few went to it in its first run. And we have a magnificent print. We always try to start out on Wednesday night with some kind of an epic. In years past, we've had, for example, Patton. And so I think it'll be a great way to kick off the festival. We're also in a kind of a symbolic sort of way. We're bringing, we're inviting back Scott Wilson, the actor who was at our first Overlook Festival, and he'll be back for the fifth. He's a star of The Right Stuff.
Which character was he in The Right Stuff?
He plays the other test pilot who is the rival of the character played by Sam Shepard.
Mm-hmm.
I think his name is Scott Crossfield.
Mm-hmm. And then there's another 12 or so films after that the following 3 days.
13 more films.
13 more
films altogether.
And it runs from the April 23rd to the 27th.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, because I missed the last one, which is yet another classic. And I think people will say, why is this one overlooked? The Capstone on Sunday, April 27th. And all these are at the Virginia Theater.
Yeah, that's Singing in the Rain.
Which I think is on almost everyone's top 10 list of the best films, or certainly the top musical, musical.
It's not overlooked as a film. But, of course, we have a definition of overlooked that will fit any film.
Anything you want to say.
We can say that musicals as a genre are overlooked.
Mm-hmm.
We can say that with the death of repertory theaters, the opportunity to see this movie in 35mm no longer exists. And we have a brand new 35mm print from the 50th anniversary restoration of Singing in the Rain. Also, there's another link. We have three silent programs this year. And so Singing in the Rain, of course, is about the transition from silent films to talkies. So it provides sort of a closure
mm-hmm.
for that. And also, here's an overlooked angle. Our guest of honor is going to be Donald O'Connor, the great Donald O'Connor, who was born actually in Danville, Illinois, and whose Make 'em Laugh number in Singing in the Rain is, I think, maybe the most joyous musical comedy number ever filmed. And everybody always thinks of Gene Kelly splashing through the puddles, but I think that in that case, Make 'em Laugh is an overlooked sequence. So we can make it overlooked.
Yeah, it definitely is worth looking at again, that's
for
sure. Now, Make 'em Laugh is the one where Donald O'Connor goes on the walls and the ceiling.
Oh, he climbs up the walls.
Yeah.
He crashes through the backdrops. He tumbles over the sofa. It's the most amazing expression of energy I've ever seen.
And updates or accounts of the whole festival for those who aren't taking notes at home, you can go to ebertfest.com. And once again, it's April 23rd to 27th.
You know, we've had one last-minute change that I'd sort of like to explain if I could.
Yeah, please do.
The original program said that on Saturday afternoon we were going to present a Benchy from Japan with an Ozu film called
mm-hmm.
I Was Born But. Benchies are a Japanese tradition. They were the people who stood next to the screen during a silent film and did a parallel performance, commenting on the action, explaining the action, reading or improvising the dialogue, arguing with the actor, with the actors on the screen, and in general, sort of upstaging the film in a way to such a degree that the Japanese liked their benchies so much they continued to make silent films until 1935 because they'd rather hear their benchies than some ordinary actor. We had hoped to bring a Benchy from Tokyo. And unfortunately, because of this SARS epidemic, the Benchy informed us that she was afraid to get on a plane, come from Tokyo. So what to do? Well, Nate Cohen, who is the director of the festival and is a professor of cinema at Georgia, used to be at Illinois, discovered an alternative program that I think, if anything, is going to be even more amazing, a Mexican Benchy performance.
Hmm.
We have a Mexican silent film called The Gray Automobile about a famous gang of gangsters in Mexico. It's a silent classic from Mexico. And we have a troupe of Benchies who, consciously copying the Japanese tradition, are doing the same thing in Spanish, English, and Japanese, I believe, and plus sound effects. So because of the scheduling problems, we've had to move that Benchy performance to 3:30 on Thursday afternoon, The Gray Automobile. And, of course, I love all 14 of these programs, but that's the one I really want to tell people about because they may overlook it. They may not know exactly what that is. And I think that those who are lucky enough to be there on Thursday afternoon for the Mexican Vinci of the gray automobile are going to be telling people for years that they saw something that that may never, ever be seen again, certainly in Champaign-Urbana.
Truly overlooked. Our guest today on Media Matters is Roger Ebert, the noted film critic and TV show host, and the host also of the 5th Annual Roger Ebert Overlooked Film Festival coming to Champaign week after next, April 23rd to 26th, sponsored by the College of Communications. And you can learn all about it by going to ebertfest.com. We're also taking calls, and we'll talk about any subject you want, not just the film festival. 333-9455 is our local number, the toll-free number, 800-222-9455. Now, one film jumped out at me as I went down the list, Roger, and that was your film that will be Friday at noon. And it's a classic by Haskell Wexler called Medium Cool.
Yes.
There's a whole group of films that were made in the late 60s and early 70s that sort of got caught up in the political climate, and Medium Cool might have been the best of that bunch. And Haskell Wexler is a native Chicagoan, too, I want to note for our listeners up to the north. And he'll be in town to talk about the film, is that right?
Yes, Haskell is coming in. He'll be on stage in person. He's, I think, the winner of 2 Academy Awards, and I think he was nominated for 5. He's one of the greatest of all cinematographers. And he's also directed a couple of films. A Medium Cool was filmed during the Democratic Convention of 1968 when thousands of protesters, Vietnam War protesters, converged on Chicago. And there were demonstrations that turned violent along Grant Park. And this convention was kind of a key moment in American political history. And what Haskell did was to plug his actors a fictional story about some people living in the uptown area of Chicago, and to plug that story into the real events. And he was actually out there with a camera in Grant Park during those demonstrations with his actors, who were acting in a way, but they're surrounded by things that are totally unplanned, uncontrolled, and real. So it's one of the great political films in American history. It's an experiment in documentary meeting fiction. And, of course, it will be a great honor to have Haskell Wexler on stage.
It will indeed. And that film will be showing Friday at noon. And for those of our listeners who have not seen or heard of this film, I think it's a rare film, and it's worth observing for historical reasons and political reasons and artistic reasons.
Yes, it is.
And, you know, what I'd like to take the Medium Cool as a way to segue to some recent issues in the film industry that I'm sure you're familiar with because they're hard to avoid, which is we're... Like in 1968, we're in the middle of a war period in the United States, in a war, and it's a source of considerable controversy. We've had a lot of guests on the show, including Mark Farrell and Robert Greenwald a few weeks ago, talking about it. Specifically, there's been a lot of celebrities, people in the film industry who have spoken out critically about the war and have, you know, taken no small amount of criticism for this behavior, the most famous of which, no doubt, is Michael Moore in his talk at the Oscar ceremonies a few weeks ago. What was your response to what Michael Moore did?
Well, I think he blew an opportunity to make a very effective speech to that worldwide audience. The winners were all told they had 45 seconds to say anything they wanted to say. And I interviewed Michael after that. It was actually in the Sun-Times a week ago, and it's still online at suntimes.com/Ebert. He says he blew it. He was rattled. He didn't think he was going to win. He got off on the wrong foot. He didn't say what he wanted to say. And then when everybody started to boo him, he started shouting, "Shame on you, Mr. Bush," which was, of course, guaranteed to make that very image-conscious audience boo him even more. The previous day at the Independent Spirit Awards, he said, when he won, he said, "The message for the children of Columbine is that violence is an acceptable way to resolve disputes." And if he had said something like that, I think he would have had the audience behind him because they gave him a standing ovation when his name was read. But I think even if you look at his body language and his vocal tone as he delivered that speech, he seemed to be defiant and expecting opposition and almost saying with his whole presence that he wasn't really happy with what he was doing or how he was doing it.
Now, since then, he has come under considerable criticism for the comments he did. At times withering, some people supporting him as well, some people giving him an opportunity to talk.
But one phenomenon that I've noticed is that right-wing radio has practically made an obsession out of attacking stars for opposing this war or for speaking out politically.
Absolutely.
And this is chilling because they don't seem to understand that we have a tradition in America of free speech, and that, you know, there are all kinds of people who have been speaking out about the war, but they single out the stars because it involves a kind of easy anti-Hollywood shorthand. I personally have not heard anything that Susan Sarandon said about the war, and I have not read anything. I've only read about her and attacks on her. She's received 25 times more publicity from radio hosts than she has received on her own. And, of course, recently the anniversary screening of Bull Durham was canceled by the Baseball Hall of Fame in Cooperstown, and that caused another controversy because, of course, Sarandon and her husband Tim Robbins are in that film. And Jay Mariotti has a very good column in today's Sun-Times. He's a supporter of the war who nevertheless feels that the Baseball Hall of Fame, what they did was unforgivable and certainly shows no awareness of our American feeling that people can express their opinions without being intimidated. I think that the government in general, the Bush administration, has been extremely quick to bring pressure against people who speak out. And when Kerry, for example, said that it was time for a regime change in America, many Republicans tried to suggest that he was unpatriotic to say that. And I think Kerry's response was very good, that as someone who was wounded and who bled in Vietnam, he wasn't going to take lectures on patriotism from the likes of Tom DeLay, the Republican leader who not only failed to serve in Vietnam, but actually blamed his lack of ability to do so on the fact that minorities had taken all of the positions in the military service, which
explanation. That's singularly astonishing. I didn't realize that. That I'd never heard that argument before.
Oh yeah, that's his reason. Now that it's a affirmative action, got all the African Americans into the army, so poor Tom DeLay could.
Yeah, those plum positions in the front lines in Vietnam.
Yeah, yeah.
We're talking to Roger Ebert today on Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney. Roger is graciously joining us from his home in Chicago. The Ebert Fest is coming up week after next. There's going to be 13 films here from April 23rd to 27th at the Virginia Theater. If you'd like to call in and ask a question, the number is 333-9455. The toll-free number, 800-222-9455. There are a couple lines open. Let's go to the phone lines now. Savoy, you're on the air with Roger Ebert.
Hello. Harry Shearer, who has a small role in The Right Stuff, wrote and directed a movie called Teddy Bear's Picnic. Have you seen it?
I haven't seen it. I haven't even heard of it. I did see Harry Shearer in a new film called A Mighty Wind,
right?
Which is a satire on the folk revival.
This is one of those that you've shown in your Overlook Film Festival. He wrote it, he directed it, but he can't get a distributor for it. So I hear him talking about it occasionally, and he's shown it in a couple of places around the country. I was just hoping that somebody had seen it. I'm a big fan of his work.
Oh, wow, I haven't seen it yet.
And maybe you can check it out, Roger.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, well, we've got another caller waiting. Let's go to that call. And by the way, if you do want to call, the number 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Champagne, you're on the air with Roger Ebert.
Hello. I'd like to ask Roger to maybe talk about films that have been made about the blacklisting of Hollywood stars and producers and writers during the McCarthy era, and then maybe Bob McChesney, or he could talk or relate that to that period of the McCarthy era to the current Patriot Act?
I'm going on the Internet Movie Database here to find out about. I'm blanking on that film directed by Irwin Winkler and starring De Niro. Remember that one?
De Niro. On the blacklist?
Yeah, about the blacklist. I'll look it up here. I'm on the.
But when you're asking me about movies, Roger, you're really in a slump.
Excuse me?
When you're asking me about films, you're in a slump because that's not my
strong suit. I'm going to come up with it here in just a second. Guilty by Suspicion.
Okay.
That was 1991. And De Niro and Annette Bening were in it. It's about a Hollywood director who is threatened with a blacklist because he doesn't want to answer questions which he believes it's his right as an American not to answer. Guilty by Suspicion.
That's a good
one that comes to mind about the blacklist.
That's the best one, you think?
I think Woody Allen might have made one, too. I'm trying to remember.
The Front with Zero Mostel?
That's right, yes, The Front.
There have actually been a lot of good ones. I just saw one made with Jeff Goldblum a couple of years ago about the film in New Mexico. Remember that film from the early 50s the blacklisted artist made? Salt of the Earth?
Right. I've never seen it. I've heard of it. Yeah,
yeah, so there have been several films made, and I know HBO's done a couple.
Of course, I think that one is by a blacklisted artist rather than about the blacklist.
Yeah, well, it's the artists who made the film Salt of the Earth were blacklisted, so that's why they had made the film in New Mexico because they couldn't get work in Hollywood.
Right.
So there have been a lot of films on the subject, and you think the De Niro one's the pick of the litter?
I thought it was an interesting film.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What about the question about the comparison today, which we've already talked a little bit about? Is this sort of a quasi-new blacklist?
Well, I found it fascinating that conservatives have joined liberals in protesting the Patriot Act. There's an item on the web about this that there's a large groups of conservatives have joined liberal groups like the ACLU because, from a conservative point of view, of course, the Patriot Act is absolutely unacceptable, since it avoids or ignores so many values that conservatives hold dear, as well as liberals, of course. I think that basically, if you have any understanding at all of American history, American freedoms, and American traditions, then the Patriot Act reads like something that would have been put through by the Russians rather than by us.
All right, we're talking to Roger Ebert today on Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McPherson.
I don't want to get totally off on politics, by the way, Bob. I'm not going to be giving political speeches from the stage of the Virginia Theater, but it certainly is true that the Bush administration seems to have a very... They keep talking about freedom, but they don't seem to have a visceral understanding of what it really entails.
Well, yes, and we'll get back to the phone lines, and we'll see what the callers want to talk about. Let me say, before we get back to the phone lines, and we have a pretty close to a full bank now, our upcoming guest on the show will include Ruth Conniff, the columnist for The Progressive, who covers national politics, Katrina Vandenhoevel, the editor of The Nation magazine, who is also an expert in Eastern Europe and has just returned from a long trip in Russia, Jenny Toomey, the rock musician, who's also the head of the Future of Music Coalition and has been working with artists, as they organize to protect their interests vis-a-vis the industry, and the economist Dean Baker, who will talk about media economics, media deregulation, and policies to encourage a broadened and a more diverse media industry. Those are the upcoming shows on Media Matters. Let's go back to the phone lines now and see who we can talk to. Savoy, you're on the air with Roger Ebert. Hello?
Hello?
Yeah, you're on the air with Roger Ebert. Yeah.
Yes. I realize it's too late to make any changes in the film festival right now, but in view of the situation, it's too bad that you didn't have the we weren't prescient and scheduled a movie called Wag the Dog, which I remember, but no one else seems to have remembered.
That was a very, very good movie with a screenplay by David Mamet.
Right, and it fits the present situation, I believe, very well.
Well, that argument could be made. I think it was, at the time, it was thought to have been inspired by some of Clinton's adventures in the Gulf. The basic argument of the movie is that when you're in trouble domestically, declare war.
Right.
Because that takes the pressure off the White House, because then everybody has to line up and be supportive.
You know, Roger, when I saw this story about that young woman from West Virginia who was rescued, and it's on the cover, I think, of Time or Newsweek this week, I couldn't help but think of Old Shoe from Wag the Dog, if you recall that character.
Yeah, the movie certainly gives you a prism through which to filter current events.
Mm-hmm. Let's go back to the phone lines. We've got line three, Urbana. You're on the air with Roger Ebert.
Good afternoon.
Hi.
I'd just like to make a comment. I think one of the reason, or the principal reason that the right stuff was forgotten was because I remember seeing it on the big screen. I think it was in 84, wasn't it?
Maybe it was 84.
Yeah, it was during the presidential year.
Yeah, it was just before the election.
Yeah.
And my impression was that it was just incredibly corny in the way that, as an example, the John Wayne movie, The Fighting Seabees, was, you know, it was just over the top with Mom, the American flag, and apple pie. And
I don't think we're talking about the same movie.
The Right Stuff?
No, I don't think we are at all.
Well,
this movie was very sardonic and very funny. And it was rather critical of the way that the astronauts were turned into public relations figures, and it showed them fighting against that.
Yeah, the way my impression when I saw it in the theater after I left was, geez, this was too much, and I think that's probably why it fizzed. Is that there were probably a lot of other people.
Well, I don't think that's why it failed, because I think you're the only person I've ever heard express that opinion about it.
All right. Well, I'm a nut.
You might want to come and see it again and give it another chance, because
okay,
it's not at all a John Wayne flag waving movie. It's a very based on the reporting of Tom Wolfe, and
the book was much better.
Okay.
All right. Well, that was one opinion, and actually, he didn't hurt the film at the box office. He went to see it at the theater.
Yeah, he did. Yeah. Uh-huh.
We're talking to Roger Ebert, host of the 5th annual Roger Ebert Overlook Film Festival, which will be at the historic Virginia Theater in Champaign, April 23rd to 27th. 13 films, starting with The Right Stuff, ending
14
with 14. Excuse me. Yeah, we're adding films as we go along.
And you can get a pass, although I don't know. I think there's still some passes left.
A free pass, or you mean?
No, not a free pass.
What sort of deal you're offering our listeners here?
No, it's a very inexpensive festival.
It is inexpensive, and the number you can call to get all the info if you want to get a ticket or a pass is 217-356-9063, or you can just go on the web to ebertfest.com, and it's generally called Ebertfest in shorthand around the campus and in the College of Communications, where Nancy Casey, the associate dean, is doing all the heavy lifting to get this thing going every year. 14 films, April 23rd to 27th. If you want to call in and talk with Roger Ebert, we have a line or two open. We're going to get to the callers who are waiting in a second. The number, 333-9455. The toll-free number, 800-222-9455. Let's go back to the phone lines now, and let's see, where do I go next? I think we should go to line two, Champagne. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you. First of all, I'd like to compliment Roger both on doing the festival itself. I think it kind of picks a niche that wasn't already filled in the movie festival world, and certainly want to thank him for bringing it to Champaign. I've got a movie critic question for you.
Uh-huh.
Given the wide variety of films available, how is it that you pick out the films that you're going to take the time to see, and more importantly, how do you organize yourself to keep things from blurring? Since you see so many films?
Well, I try to, because I have a website and an annual movie yearbook, I try to write reviews of a great many more films than most critics do. Last year I wrote 272 reviews, and that would include most of the major releases. And also, I'm very eager to look at independent films, documentaries, and foreign films. Films with less exposure, because I think that in a way the critic is more necessary for those films. When I see them, I take notes. Sometimes I do get things wrong. I hear a lot of, I get email from people very eager to point out my errors, which I'm happy to correct. I don't have one of those photographic memories. I think Pauline Kael never forgot a single moment of a single movie she saw. She was astonishing, but my mind doesn't work that way. I think I'm more average in my memory, but I do my best, and I try to write the review fairly soon after seeing the film, or if I've seen it months ago at a film festival, I always try to see it again, you know, to refresh my memory before writing the review. Sometimes a year or two can go past before a movie comes around that you've seen.
Well, I guess I'm kind of curious. I mean, obviously there have to be big studio movies that you're absolutely mandatory.
I do all the big studio movies.
And then how do you pick and choose the other movies that you're going to see, let alone write about?
It kind of takes care of itself. Basically, they have to open. And if it's a national release, chances are I'll review it.
I see.
The thing I have to kind of draw the line at, people are forever sending me videos or asking me to see their film. And, you know, there were 900 films submitted to Sundance last year. The critic cannot be the first consumer. Somehow there has to be some kind of a process, a winnowing process. Either if a film gets distribution or if it's in a major festival, then it comes to my attention. But I've got, I don't know how many hundreds, if not thousands of videos in a big box that if I haven't mailed them back, I just can't take 2 hours of my life to look at a movie that comes in through the mail.
You know, Roger, at least once or twice when I've watched your television show, I've heard you or maybe the Siskel in the past, maybe Roper now, talk about when you've been reviewing an especially terrible movie, how you felt bad that you wasted 2 hours of your life watching it. And I can't help but think when you're watching that many movies and seeing how much, with all due respect to Hollywood filmmakers, how much trash gets produced, that you know, so many equation movies where you can predict the plot after the opening sequence and you know exactly how it's going to develop.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it must be difficult at times to sit through some of these films.
Well, of course, for me, it's not as bad as for the hapless person who has spent $8 or $9 or $10 for a ticket, because at least I'm going to be able to write a review of it, and sometimes I can even have fun with it if it's enough of a target.
Mm-hmm.
So I get my revenge, and I also have the consolation that maybe I'll save some other people from seeing it.
That's a good way to look at it. Let's go back to the phone lines. Line 1, Champagne, you're on the air with Roger Ebert.
Hi.
Hello.
Bonjour.
Yeah. I saw a movie in the late 60s that I've never heard hide nor hair of again that I really enjoyed, called The Square Root of Zero. Have you ever heard of it?
The Square Root of Zero. That does not ring a bell. I'm going to look it up on the Internet Movie Database.
Okay.
Does everybody know about the Internet Movie Database?
No, why don't you tell us about it while you're looking it up?
It's just an amazing site that has... Now, here's a movie. Now, this is amazing. You know, they have the user rating where people are asked to rate the movie on a scale of 1 to 10.
Mm-hmm.
The movie came out in 1963, and after 40 years, it still doesn't have 5 votes, so it doesn't have a rating. It has no reviews. It has no user comments. This movie, you may be the only person who's even seen this movie.
No, I saw it with my husband.
Okay.
You're not the filmmaker of it, I hope.
No, no.
Okay.
No, I mean, I'd like to see it again. I'd like to rent it or whatever.
Mm.
It doesn't even have a plot description.
They
know nothing about this movie. It's not on DVD. It's not on VHS. Goodness.
Boy, this is one that's fallen through the cracks of time.
Is it available anywhere?
No. Hmm. It's not on home video.
Who produced it, Roger?
Well, let's see.
Does it tell you?
Dorian William Cannon directed it. Let's see who produced it. Mark L. Productions.
Hmm. Okay. Well, caller, I guess that's the best we can do with The Square Root of Zero.
I thought it was really funny. It was a very 60s kind of scene, and it starts out saying, "I finished my novel last night. Now all I have to do is write it down."
You know, speaking of novels, the movie we're showing at noon on Thursday is called The Stone Reader.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a fascinating documentary that I'm especially happy to have in the festival, because if anyone is or has ever been a graduate student, it's going to awaken
three-quarters
all kinds of good and bad memories. It's about a novel that came out in 1972 and was reviewed in the New York Times, which said that it was the definitive novel of its generation. And the director of the film, who is going to be our guest, bought the novel, didn't read it. Apparently, he came across it some 30 years later, started to read it, thought it was a masterpiece, looked on the web to see what else this writer had written. Dal Mossman was his name. couldn't find anything and started on a search to find out what had ever happened to him, and the search takes him 2 years. It's as he goes, as he traces the path of this man through undergraduate and graduate school and talks to his thesis advisor, his agent, his publisher, and others about this novel that was so promising and so well-reviewed, and then both the novel and the author appear to have disappeared.
And this is a documentary?
Yeah, it's called The Stone Reader.
Okay.
And it'll be at noon on Thursday. If anybody, especially people in the English department or people who have ever written fiction or anyone who's ever tried to get a book published, who's ever been a thesis advisor or tried to write a thesis, this movie is going to involve elements of their lives.
I think you're showing it in the right community, and certainly in my audience, I think it's a high percentage of people who fit that description. I've never written fiction, but I've been accused of it many times.
There are moments there are moments of kind of recognition in the film as the thesis advisor remembers the student, as classmates remember the student.
This is Ebert Fest again, that's coming up week after next at the Virginia Theater here in Champaign-Urbana. Let's go back to the phone lines. We have a full bank and some very patient
obviously
people.
Obviously, people should go all Thursday afternoon. They can see the Stone Reader, then they can see the Mexican Benchy.
I think they should just plan on trying to get one of these passes so they can go to every show if that's
possible.
Well,
you know, possible. On Thursday night, we have two major American directors who are going to be on stage. Neil LaBute is going to be appearing with Your Friends and Neighbors, and Bob Rafelson will be on hand with Blood and Wine. Now, Rafelson, of course, directed Jack Nicholson in Five Easy Pieces, which is a great American film with a great Nicholson performance. But when they teamed up again in Blood and Wine, it simply did not find an audience, and I think it's a very good movie.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's go back to the phone lines now. For the Line 3, Urbana, you've been very patient. You're on the air with Roger Ebert.
Thanks so much for keeping your connection and your appreciation of Urbana alive.
Oh, yeah.
I got my pass immediately as soon as they came out. For those of us who are immersed in tax preparation and yard work, would you just take one of your selections and give us a thumbnail, a very short description of it, tell us who your guests are going to be, and just a two-liner about why you chose that, so at least we have one that we can really hang our hats on.
You know, Roger, well, I think we've done about five or six of the...
I've got another one I can mention to her, though, although she'll have to give up her Saturday morning in the garden to come
and see it. I'll give up everything.
11 o'clock Saturday morning is the golden age of silent comedy. And whenever I go to Los Angeles, I like to go down on Fairfax Boulevard to the Silent Movie Theater, where Charlie Lussman shows silent films every night, and he shows some short subjects. Then there's a break, and you can have his mother's chocolate chip cookies, and then there's the main feature. And he also does a little song and dance in honor of silent film. And Charlie is going to be coming to our festival with his veteran piano player to show magnificently restored 35-millimeter prints of great silent shorts by people like Chaplin and Keaton and Laurel and Hardy. And that will be Saturday morning. And I believe that because that is the so-called kiddie matinee, although certainly silent comedy is universal in its appeal to all ages, I think that show might actually be free.
Oh.
Boy, I'll get in trouble if I'm wrong.
Yeah, better not promising. People can go to ebertfest.com and find out for sure. So we'll play it safe. Roger, we've got a full bank of phone callers, so let's get back to them so they can all get on the air with you.
And, of course, at 7 o'clock on Friday night, we have another silent film, Douglas Fairbanks and the Black Pirate, with the Alloy Orchestra, which is a big hit at the Overlook. They come in every year from Cambridge, Massachusetts. They specialize in playing music for silent films. And the Alloy, the Black Pirate is interesting because it was an early attempt to do a film in color. It has two-strip Technicolor.
What year was it made?
19.
But
there are no dates here on my my website. I believe about 1926.
Yeah, that is really an early effort, isn't it?
Yeah.
Color. Well, we've got a caller here from line two, Pasodum. You're on the air with Roger Ebert.
Just want to check out my Paranoia. It isn't an overlooked film, but a delayed film. Are my suspicions about The Quiet American not getting released in a timely fashion in terms of what we're faced as a nation, grounded in any kind of reality? Or
oh, yeah, that's a pretty well-known story. That movie was going to come out in the fall of 2001, and it's based on the Graham Greene novel about the very earliest days of America's involvement in Vietnam. And, in fact, it makes the charge that America sponsored terrorist acts in Vietnam as a pretense to give us an excuse to go in there in the very early 60s. Stars Michael Caine and Brendan Fraser. Harvey Weinstein, the head of Miramax, felt right after 9/11 that it just wasn't appropriate to release the film, and it sat on the shelf for a year. Michael Caine went to him and begged him to at least show it at the Toronto Film Festival because Caine felt it was one of his best performances. And when it played at Toronto last September, it did get very, very good reviews and a very strong audience response, and so then Miramax did release it. And, of course, it did get Michael Caine an Academy Award nomination. It's a very good film.
Okay, let's go
it's
back.
It's not largely a political film. Really, it's more about one of those Graham Greene heroes who's kind of got faded idealism in a kind of a weary and tattered way and tries to hold on to his notions in a corrupt world. And it also involves kind of a heartbreaking romance.
It sounds
it's
like
a
good candidate for an upcoming Overlook Film Festival.
Well, I don't know that it's truly overlooked. It has done a good deal of business, and it did get an Academy Award nomination, but I loved it.
Yeah, well, I think it by the sort of criteria we're using for Singing in the Rain, we can get that one overlooked.
Okay.
All right. Line one, Urbana, you're on the air with Roger Ebert.
Hi, I have a couple of quick suggestions for candidates for future Overlooked Film Festivals. The first one is Smoke Signals, which is a late 90s film based on a Sherman Alexie short story.
Yes, this is the one about, it's a comedy set on an Indian reservation.
Right. And the other
one
is...
By the same director who made a very good movie called Skins.
Right. And then the other one is The Business of Fancy Dancing, which is written and directed by Sherman Alexie, which just showed here on campus last week. It was a very small showing, about 70 people. For people who haven't seen either of these films, they're about contemporary Native Americans. And what was very apparent to me is that there's this huge pool of talent that the average audience doesn't otherwise have the opportunity to appreciate. And I think these would be very strong films for the...
Well, you know, I like Sherman Alexie, and I had seen his two other films. I've never heard of The Business of...
Fancy Dancing.
The Business of Fancy Dancing.
All right. Well,
we're picking up, of course, Alexie, wrote the original story? Is that it?
Well, you know, we lost the caller because I want to get the phone lines open for another caller to call in.
Okay, fine.
But let's go now to our toll-free number, an out-of-town caller. Line four, you're on the air with Roger Ebert.
Yeah, I have a particular fondness, not just for the silence, but for animation, and I'm thinking of some glorious foreign animated flicks that I dare say not one in a thousand of your audience have seen that ought to be seen by a lot more people. I remember this lovely French item from the 60s to a script by Brecht called Act Without Words. Needless to say, it's kind of downbeat. It's animated, though. And this glorious Polish item called Games of Angels, which played out to the chant of these dying Jews in a concentration camp, which is semi-realistic.
We've shown a couple of animated films from Japan. We've never shown any from Europe yet. We showed Grave of the Fireflies and Metropolis.
Yeah, speaking of Japan, I think more people, and getting back to France, should see... among other neglected items, this amazing film called Woman in the Dunes from France.
Oh, yes.
The Godard films, Weekend.
Woman in the Dunes is a Japanese film.
Excuse me?
Woman in the Dunes is a Japanese film.
I knew that. I was just trying, sometimes I try to say two things at once.
Okay.
Yeah.
I love that film.
I was thinking also of Godard and Weekend, Puel Le Fou. There's this great German film from the early 30s. It's a short called Uberfall, about a violent street mugging, which is an amazing piece of it really sort of grabs you. It puts you right there in the place of the victim.
You know, if there were a new 35-millimeter print of Woman in the Dunes, that would be great to show, because that is a film that was enormously popular at the time and has become overlooked since then. I do not believe it's available on video.
Roger, if the people, like our callers, have ideas for future film festivals, films they think you might want to consider like that, is there a way they can get that information to you?
Well, I'll tell you, there is. They can write to answerman@suntimes.com.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact is that there have been, you know, there are so many films. And I can't, you know, if somebody suggests a film that I haven't seen, how much time do I have to look at 100 or 1,000 suggestions? It almost has to happen through my own experience over the last 35 years of films that I have seen and encountered, both in first run or at festivals or in revival.
Yeah, I was thinking of the films like the one just called where you've seen it and you say, hey, that really is a good idea, not that you'd have to go out and look at a bunch of new films you hadn't seen before.
Yeah, it's a real problem of time that I'm up against, and I don't think people really realize that. They say, you've got to look at this movie, and they hand me a video. They're saying, you know, you've got to give me 2 hours of your life.
Yeah.
And I see about 15 movies a week as it is.
Mm-hmm. We're talking to Roger Ebert, of course, the Chicago Sun-Times film critic, TV film critic, as our guest today, and the host of the 5th Annual Roger Ebert Overlook Film Festival, which will be April 23rd to 27th at the historic Virginia Theater in downtown Champaign, sponsored by the College of Communications here at the university. Nancy Casey, the associate dean, sort of being the main poobah in charge of that and organizing that and doing the heavy lifting. If you're interested in learning more about the festival, and I think we've talked about half the film so far today, you can call 356-9063 or go online to ebertfest.com. Get all the information there. Give me some wonderful films. And let's go back to the phone lines if we can right now. Line 3, Champaign, thank you for your patience. You're on with Roger Ebert.
Oh, hi. Stop me if you've already talked about this, but I wanted to talk about the New Art Theater.
Yeah.
No, go ahead. We haven't.
Good. Well, it seems to have been squeezed out of business by a combination of competition from the commercial theaters and chicanery by its landlord and probably by others. I'm sort of wondering partly if there's anything we should do, or do we just sort of chalk this up to, progress of...
Well, there was already something you should have done, and that's go to the art theater.
Surely did that.
But not enough people did.
You
know, it's a shame that, art theaters can only survive, alternative types of theaters, if people actually go and attend them and buy tickets. And Champaign-Urbana really did not support the art theater. I was just up in Fargo, which is not exactly as enlightened a community as Champaign-Urbana, where the Fargo Theater there has a first-run art policy and has been thriving because the people do go and support the films. I know that the situation with the art theater is very complicated and that the landlord has actually said that he wants to keep the theater open, and there's also apparently a man who operates the art theater, the art-type theater in Decatur, who wants to take it over, and I think that it probably will remain theater. I do not know all of the details of its closing, and I don't want to get into that. But I will say that if you're really interested in films and if you respect the way that you spend your time, you kind of want to look at the offerings at a theater like that before you go to the multiplex and see the latest picture that's open on 3,000 screens. The winner this weekend, for example, is Anger Management with Jack Nicholson and Adam Sandler. Yeah. And it's really a waste of time. It's a waste of time. And I bet you that a lot of people in the sound of my voice went to see it Friday night or Saturday night, or they're thinking of going to see it tonight because, oh, they like Jack Nicholson or they like Adam Sandler or something. And it's just not an intelligent way to program your life.
You know, Roger, let's put this in perspective. Champaign-Urbana now is dominated by two large multiplexes that I think sell the overwhelming majority of movie tickets.
Yeah, but they show movies that, I mean, they show the movies that show at multiplexes for the most part.
That's right, but what about...
The Art Theater, week after week, showed movies that would have been a very good choice, and overwhelmingly, people in Champaign-Urbana didn't go.
Just curious, though, when you were growing up here in high school and then in college and right out of college, what was the film theater situation in Champaign-Urbana?
Well, the art theater in those days was showing very, very good first-run films. And then you had the Princess Theater on Main Street in Urbana, which later became the cinema. It was usually second-run. You had the co-ed theaters on campus, the Thunderbird Theater on campus, which showed tried to show high-quality films. You had the Rialto, the Virginia, the Orpheum, the Art, and the Illini downtown Champaign.
How many of those were showing foreign language films on a somewhat regular basis?
The Thunderbird and the Art.
Yeah, because that's sort of one of the stories, and we don't have time to go into it today, which has been the decline of foreign language films in American movie theaters over the past 30 years.
In a way, they've been pushed aside by American independent films.
Hmm. Well, let's go back to our last and most patient caller.
Okay.
Line 2, Urbana, thank you for your great patience. You're on the air with Roger Ebert.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi.
They probably drifted to sleep. Or...
Hello.
Yeah, hi, you're on the air with Roger Ebert. Oh.
Hello. I have our passes for the fifth year. We'll be there.
Okay.
But Roger is you are very cherished in this community and very much appreciated. And I hope you're going to come by the Champaign County History Museum and bring something that we can put in our permanent exhibit.
Oh, there,
we
I know where
you.
It is, right there on
the
University Avenue.
At the Cattle Bank.
Yeah, that used to be a little sundries shop.
And many other things, by the way.
Yeah.
Grocery stores, drug stores, and many, many things, and a bottled water company.
Well, I always turned right there when I was going to work at the News Gazette. You went down University Avenue, turned right, went down to the parking lot on the other side of the IC tracks, and that's where you could park your car and walk underneath the tracks to get to the News Gazette and go to work.
Absolutely.
Well, those hot summer mornings.
Turn right and come on in. We really, you know, we're hoping.
Well, I'd like to. You know, the problem with the festival is that it really takes up every waking hour because I'm actually there at the theater before, after, and during each of the movies.
Absolutely. We know that, and we appreciate it. But also, pack something up and get it to us for our permanent exhibit.
Okay,
along
I will do that. Allison
Krauss and all the other wonderful people that we have in our community.
I'll have to do that.
All right. Well, I think that was a very nice caller.
You know, you ought to ask Donald O'Connor for something, because Danville is in Champaign County, isn't it? Or is it in Vermilion?
I think it's Vermilion. You know,
oh, well.
Danville seems to be like a hotbed of talent.
You know,
Dick Van Dyke, Gene Hackman.
The Van Dyke brothers, Gene Hackman, and Donald O'Connor.
Yeah.
Those four stars all had the same high school drama teacher.
Well, that's really quite something.
And whoever that teacher was must have been a great teacher.
Yeah, I'll say. That's an extraordinary story. Well, Roger, I want to thank you very much for joining us today on Media Matters. It's been terrific. And let me remind all our listeners that the Roger Ebert Overlook Film Festival, the fifth annual one, is coming to Champaign to the Virginia Theater April 23rd to 27th. It is a major event, and it is something that's really sort of taken over the community, as a lot of our callers have talked about. If you're interested in finding out about it, the number is 356-9063, and you can go to ebertfest.com. And Roger Ebert will be there the entire time. It's impossible to miss him if you attend the Ebert Fest. Any closing words you'd like to say, Roger?
Well, there were a couple of films we didn't get to, and one of them is Charlotte Sometimes, which is a movie about by and about Asian Americans, which I saw at the Hawaii Film Festival last fall and liked so much that I actually invited it the moment it was over. And then, of course, we also have...
And that's on Saturday at 6.
That's Saturday at 6, and at 9:30 on Saturday, Jill and Karen Sprecher will be in person, the director and the co-writers of 13 Conversations About One Thing. And they are...
You know, I've been told by a producer the one thing I have to do now is get off the air.
Oh, get off the air. Okay,
yeah.
Well, see you at the Overlook then.
You'll see me there, and thank you very
okay,
much for joining
thanks
us.
A lot.
Bye-bye.